This segment's title is The Realities of EMP. Accepting the premise that I have previously presented regarding the stability of mind, thought, and body, reactivism is off of the table. I will approach this segment based upon that idea and utilizing and applying objective thought, reason, analytical responses, and behaviors. All responses, whether they are in the implementation of planning, policy, or actions, must be devoid of emotional reactive behaviors. That does not mean that EMP is not a threat. But even being faced with the imminent danger of a person with a gun facing you in the room, coming at you and threatening you, an emotional reactive response is not wise. This gun scenario is a highly debated subject, but factually proven with real-world results. People say all the time, never bring a knife to a gunfight. That is completely absurd. Even when a person has a gun and intends to use it offensively, not defensively, in reaction to a person who is within 21 feet of them who has a knife, the likelihood is the person with the gun will die if the person with the knife has the intent to kill them. Even if they don't, the likelihood is that they will die, because knife wound victims have a much more high likelihood of killing a person than that of a gunshot. Simple fact. Easily backed by uniform crime report studies and data going back 30 and 40 years. Here's the thing. If you go in to a situation like that with improper expectations, believing that they have a gun so you're dead, and you just acquiesce and submit, you will probably die. The reality is that if you know the facts that I just presented and you actually approach it that way, you have a chance of surviving. If you don't, you will be a victim for sure. Do not allow yourself to be a victim. This applies whether it's in a person threatening you with a gun or with some other threat. Inaction is action. Don't give your ability to respond to the one who is attacking you. In the case of the EMP, it is the boogeyman. It is the 800-pound gorilla in the room for the last 70 years. A sidebar note, if you don't know that saying, 800-pound gorilla is an American English an expression for a person or an organization so powerful that it can act without regard to the rights of others or the law. The phrase is rooted in an old joke, a riddle. Where does an 800-pound gorilla sit? To which the answer is, anywhere it wants to. This highlights the disparity of power between the 800-pound gorilla and everything else. The term can describe a powerful geopolitical military force, a business, a powerful corporate entity that is so large and has such a majority percentage of whatever market that they compete in that they can use their strength to crush all would-be competitors. Or it could be a military, or it could be a nation and the perception of their military. Whatever it is, the metaphor includes an inherent bit of hyperbole, a small slight, a joke. The highest weight yield yet recorded for an actual obese gorilla is 600 pounds. The average weight is 400. So imagine an 800-pound gorilla, even amongst other gorillas, they would have the upper hand. Let me explain a little bit about EMP. We did not get a chance to do that when I had Dr. Peter Pry on the first time. I wanted to make sure that I underscored it. We can't really cover this topic in depth without recognizing that there's more than just EMP. There's EMR, and TPR. So let me give you a brief explanation. EMP, or an EMR incident, the more exposure to radiation, the more severe the short and long-term effects are on the human body. Some radiation exposure is natural in our environment. It's critical to limit radiation exposure as much as possible or as practical. EMR, created by the rapid atomized by an explosion dispersal of non-fissioned components of both a nuclear fission device or a non-nuclear device containing radioactive isotopes, materials in the form of large amounts of EMR, electromagnetic radiation. It consists mainly of soft X-rays. EMR is absorbed rapidly in the surrounding atmosphere, rapidly heating it to extremely high temperatures, forming a hot sphere of air and gaseous residues. The fireball grows within milliseconds. A 1 megaton detonation expands a fireball to 150 meters. Within 10 milliseconds, a 1 megaton expands the fireball to 2,200 meters. Fireball rises at a rate of 100 meters per second. That heat rising, the rapid expansion of the fireball massively compresses the surrounding atmosphere, creating a devastating blast wave. The fireball cools within 1 minute, no longer, emitting radiation, forming a mushroom cloud. TPR is a thermal pulse radiation, 35% of the energy expelled, temperatures of 40 to 70 million degrees centigrade in the immediate area of a detonation, vaporizing anything directly at the blast point. Nuclear radiation, 15% of the energy from a nuclear explosion, is expelled. Initial ionizing radiation, 5%, primarily neutron, X, and gamma rays emitted in the first minute of an EMP burst and the result of an EMR. So let's go into what the effects are of an EMR. The electromagnetic pulse or radiation potentially melts solid-state electronics in seconds without warning. The only possible way to protect sensitive electronics is to place them in a Faraday cage. You can go to practicesurvival.com, go to the area that says useful info, and drill down in. You'll find the Faraday cage there on the list on the right side, and you can read about it. I have a simple primer there that can take you elsewhere to learn more. It's easy to make a Faraday cage. I even have that on one of the associated pages. In the event of an EMP EMR event, vehicles with electronic ignitions, engine computers, GPS units, radios, cell phones, and other electronics may be completely destroyed all around you in seconds. You may not, and likely will not, with the super EMPs that have no nuclear part of their components, see a mushroom cloud, feel or see the results of a blast wave, see a fire, see heat. None of that will occur. It will be an aerial detonation. That is the maximum effect. The EMR will also affect you. If you have a pacemaker, the results could be instantaneously. The rest of us may be affected too, but how much depends on the power, the level of power of the EMP event. EMP can disrupt brain waves, cause nausea, dementia, cancer, and more. High levels of EMR emitted from cell phones and high-tension power lines have demonstrated that they can cause bees to become disoriented, fail to pollinate, and not return to the hive. It is a destructive effect on vehicles, communications, and other electronics. The military that many survivalists fear, their sensitive equipment could be destroyed. So they place spares in Faraday cages, store spare components and parts, even return to EMP-proof vehicles that don't rely on electronics to run. It's really important to understand, though, what exactly that means. Because when we talk about the effects, it's critical that you understand that those effects have not been well documented. I will put a link on the page for this show to the Homeland Security Committee hearings on electromagnetic pulse, threat to infrastructure, critical infrastructure. And there are lots of videos on there and associated results that will tell you lots and lots of things that you need to know. But understand, part of what came out of that, which I'll have a link there to the futurescience.com site, here is an excerpt. I'll read you a quick piece from it, from the EMP Commission's Critical National Infrastructures Report. Quote, automobiles. The potential EMP vulnerability of automobiles derives from the use of built-in electronics that support multiple automotive functions. Electronic components were first introduced into automobiles in the late 1960s. As time passed and electronics technologies evolved, electronic applications in automobiles proliferated. Modern automobiles have as many as 100 microprocessors that control virtually all functions. While electronic applications have proliferated within electronics in automobiles, so too have application standards and electromagnetic interference and electromagnetic compatibility practices. Thus, while it may be expected that increased EMP vulnerability would accompany the proliferated electronics application, this trend, at least in part, is mitigated by the increased application of EMI-EMC practices. So let me break that down real quick. In other words, they found that though there are more electronics in the cars, that the possible effect and negative outcome of an EMP striking them has gone down because they have been slowly incorporating EMP hardening into these systems. Now, the more micro size that these electronics become, the more vulnerable they become because they work and function on lower voltages and lower amperages. So it's a give and take. Automobiles, and here's a really critical thing. We tested a sample of 37 cars in an EMP simulation laboratory with automobile vintages ranging from 1986 through 2002. Automobiles of these vintages include extensive electronics and represent a significant fraction of automobiles on the road today. The testing was conducted by exposing running and non-running automobiles to sequentially increasing EMP field intensities. If anomalous response, either temporary or permanent, were observed, the testing of that particular vehicle was stopped. If an anomalous response was observed, the testing was continued. If no anomalous response was observed, the test was continued up to the field intensity limits of the simulation capability, approximately 50 kVm. Automobiles were subjected to EMP environments under both engine turned off and engine turned on conditions. No effects were subsequently observed in those automobiles that were not turned on during EMP. This is big. That means if your car is off and an EMP happens, it's likely your car will start and run. The most serious effect observed on running automobiles was that the motors in three cars stopped at field strengths of approximately 30 kVm or above. In an actual EMP exposure, these vehicles would glide to a stop and require the driver to restart them. Electronics in the dashboard of one automobile were damaged and required repair. Other effects were relatively minor. 25 automobiles exhibited malfunctions that could be considered only a nuisance, blinking dashboard lights, etc., and it required no intervention by the driver. So let me be clear. This is key. In the end, in truck tests, 13 of 18 trucks exhibited a response while running. Most seriously, three truck motors stopped. Two could be restarted immediately, only one required repairs. None that were not running were affected at all, period. So let's put that in perspective. That means that if your vehicle is off, it's probably still going to run. This changes the entire approach of what we have been taught and blabbed to by preppers and all these doomsdayers who talk about all kinds of problems. Here is the simple fact. A little preparation goes a long way. In all these tests, even in the incidents where they did result in a negative result, they found that the engine computer, the transmission computer, the spark plugs, and the light bulbs were the things affected, headlights, taillights, etc. If that's the case, then I proffer placing one spare of each of those into a Faraday cage, putting it in your trunk, will give you the maximum effect to guarantee no matter where you are or what condition your vehicle is in when an EMP occurs, you will still have mobility and transportation. Period. End of story. The only real world information that we have in the real world of an EMP happening happened both in the late 50s with the Bikini Island tests, one aerial test that happened after that by the U.S. government in 1962, and then recent events where there have been attacks on power grids in Yemen and other places in the Middle East that took down their grids for 3 months, 3 weeks, depending upon the location. But let's talk real world. EMP is a threat. If it stops your communications and your phone stops working, then we're in trouble. If you don't have the internet, then most people will lose their mind. This is what will happen. But none of these things cannot be overcome. The real threat is to massive, large-size systems like the power grid that do not have EMP proofing built in them because our government has been remiss at acting proactively. If you really want to see a result, take some minor steps for yourself and take some major, major steps in pressing your local federal representatives to get on it and get things done on implementing systems and protections from EMP. Dr. Peter Pry talked about it, and you can go back and listen to the show that was on the 6th of May, 2017, on EMP. He spoke about the fact in one of his books that in Maine, he went there, presented to them, they had nothing, they didn't even know what EMP was, and within 6 months, they had legislation pushing forward to make massive sweeping changes to protect their system. 2 years later, they are in the best position in the entire United States. How sad is it that a small state like that could act that well and the federal government failed to do that? This is where we come in pressing our people in the government to represent us wisely in order to protect us. Forget worrying about stadiums and this and that. People pick it in the street to get a new stadium and have it paid for by taxpayer money and have it government organized, but they don't pay any attention to these things that are most critical. You can visit practicepreparedness.com. I'll put the link down the bottom in the show page to take you to the part on EMP to enlighten you. And that'll be all for now on this segment of the realities of EMP. Thank you for listening.